We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Now a special Talk Radio 1210 WPHT presentation. It's Readin', Writin', and Reason. Now here's your host, Dom Giordano.
Hey, welcome in everyone. Dom Giordano with you. Dan at the controls here at Readin', Writin', and Reason. Our weekly look at all those things that parents, citizens, taxpayers have to look at. Battles over education. One of the biggest continues to be breaking this week. And that is President Biden's proposal of more student loan forgiveness. Something about this forgiveness is rolling out his latest round of federal loan and quotes forgiveness while continuing to support the industry that is around this, the predatory industry, some would say. And in addition, defying the Supreme Court edict that told him he couldn't do this. He doesn't have the power. So on Monday of the past week, Vice President Harris was dispatched to Philadelphia to promote this student debt relief plan. She asked, what can we do to relieve some of the burden? And again, we heard about how individuals couldn't make it, get through the month, rent, mortgages, forgiveness. And she particularly talked about public servants. And I've talked on my Noon to Three show about who is a public servant. All these people like Kamala Harris, Dwight Evans, a congressman in this area that she was with, they consider themselves public servants. How about small business people that create jobs? Are they public servants or do they just have to pay for this stuff? Well, as I said, President Biden's first attempt at canceling student debt was blocked by the Supreme Court. Since then, the administration has used more narrow channels to eliminate around $140 billion in loans for around 4 million borrowers. The new plan would automatically cancel debt for people who would qualify for the existing debt relief programs, but who have not applied, including from the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, which provides relief to teachers and other public servants. And again, this rankles me, not just the money, but that this group is being set aside as more worthy of this government largesse. Vice President Harris met up and used as an exemplar a woman who is a social worker, and she shared a tearful story about her loans, which ballooned to over $300,000. We're still trying to figure out how you could ring up $300,000, the Inquirer says, as she pursued education degrees. The quote from Kelly Gray, the person who had that forgiven and said she went on to get a house for her and her twin daughters, quote, my student debt story is like everyone else's. I knew I wanted a better life for myself and twin daughters. Well, we want a better life for every American, for everybody out there, without a doubt. But why are we singling out this group of individuals who have rung up $300,000 in this case of student loan debt? Secretary of Education Cardona talked on several national shows this week about the Biden administration and college accountability. But he didn't talk about the colleges, big college, jacking up tuition. He talked somehow or another about forgiving all that, and that would help with accountability. No, it doesn't. All it does is have the whole system, big college, continue to put it. I mean, there are stories there this week, several of them, which college, they're getting close to it, will charge $100,000 a year. Why not do it? I'd advise them. If I were on their board, because you're going to get the money and the government's going to provide it and you will continue to rack up your endowment. Some are at $90,000 a year plus. Why not 100 then? Why not any number? Well, come on now, Dom. You can't mean that. Well, I'm telling you, the student loan debt thing not only has a moral component, but it has a presidential component. We'll see how the American people feel about that as the president's race continues. And we have two big sides on that, so we'll see how it plays out. One other thing, coming off the women's NCAA tournament this week here on Reading, Writing, and Reason, it was fabulous. Caitlin Clark, the coaches of Dawn Staley, her players at South Carolina, the LSU coach, Angel Reese. Fascinating stuff. A lot of drama. The Connecticut team. And the championship game on Sunday past, did 18.7 million viewers. Wow. So why in the world did Dawn Staley, when asked point blank about biological males playing in women's sports, which are a fire right now, basketball, say yes, even if they just consider themselves to be a woman, they should be able to play? Well, there was a reaction this week from the National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics, the NAIA. Now, this system, I believe, is around 70 schools or so. These are mainly private colleges, relatively small colleges, but they met, and their Council of Presidents, by a vote of 20-0, said that the first responsibility they have was to create fairness and competition in the NAIA. We also think our reason to ban transgender athletes from women's sports in the NAIA, we also think it aligns with the reasons Title IX was created. You're allowed to have, quote, separate but equal opportunities for women to compete. That's their language. That's their quote. Hopefully, we'll be able to talk with them at some point here on Reading, Writing, and Reason. A lot of stuff going on around schools and recovery from COVID. And one of the things that has happened is the high absentee rate. Great column at The Federalist, Buer, how school absenteeism went from silly movie plot to sinister epidemic. And in this piece at The Federalist, they talk about the fact that more and more schools are having huge percentages of kids that are constantly absent, consistently absent. And that means missing more than 10% of school time over the course of the year, which is a huge thing given the recovery from COVID academically. But I love Ferris Bueller's Day Off. That's one thing. This is an epidemic. This is a huge, huge thing to deal with. By the way, speaking of mainly high schools, but it could be at any level, headline, librarians fear new penalties, even prison, says the headline, as activists challenge books. This is based in Missouri. Now, this is such an overreaction to me by the American Library Association and others claiming that people that are concerned about any number of books that are very sexual, graphic, many of them are transgender related, it seems, are going to put librarians in prison over this. First of all, they're not bans per se of these books. Other than people are looking at the appropriateness of this in school libraries, particularly sometimes in town libraries in the children's section. And I think it's appropriate, and it's a debate to be had around any number of titles. And one of the tests that I've come up with here in Reading, Writing, and Reason with Dom Giordano, if you are stopped from reading passages of these books aloud during a school board meeting, might that be a signal that these are not age appropriate for younger kids, at least? Might that tell you that a lot of people might object to them being in the school library? Is that a ban, or is this a reasonable debate around that proposition? And no, I don't think we're going to be putting librarians in prison. Librarians fear new penalties, even prison, as activists challenge books. I don't see that happening. One big thought to leave you with at the beginning of Reading, Writing, and Reason this week, we have Moms for Liberty and the On Deck Circle coming up with a great story related to them by Leah Page, writing in the Wall Street Journal. This is a child care expert. She's the author of Parenting in the Here and Now. And she asked this question: are we giving kids too many choices too early on? A four-year-old isn't ready for autonomy. We grow into it. She talks about an incident recently of her friend asked her three-year-old son, pepperoni or plain pizza? Milk or water? Would you like a straw? The child burst into tears. I don't want pizza. I want juice. My friend lost her patience. Stop whining. Just eat your lunch. What parent hasn't been there? She writes, it seems harmless when a parent asks a young child plain or pepperoni. After all, choice is at the heart of freedom and independence. When our kids mature, we hope they'll choose well and have the courage and resiliency to learn from their mistakes. Small children make choices all the time. But when a child is invited to make a choice, if we give too many choices, they learn that wanting is important and what he wants is paramount, a sure way to invite power struggles and open the door to anxiety and self-centeredness. When our four-year-old daughter became resistant to her bedtime, my husband and I sought help from parenting books. They all suggested, give her a sense of autonomy. We should give her a choice, which pajamas to wear, for example. But our child's autonomy wasn't the issue. The real problem was our discomfort with her discomfort. We had to learn that if we held firm and gave her gentle support, she could cope with her feelings about not getting what she wanted, a lesson in strength and resilience for us all. Now, this has set off a pretty good debate around these issues, and I plan to try to get Ms. Page on Reading, Writing, and Reason. Are we giving kids too many choices? Now, that doesn't mean the parent just has to say no choices, be loud about it, be someone that in no way, shape, or form is just not dictating things. She mentioned the example of the child with bed and how to deal with that. So expect more on that. But coming up here on Reading, Writing, and Reason, we're going to talk with Moms for Liberty. The head founder, Tiffany Justice, gave a speech at the Heritage Foundation recently, where she talked about the teachers' unions, and she talked even about the FBI visiting one of their members. And her claim is they are weaponizing the government against parents who dissent at school board meetings and the like. We'll talk with her next year. Dom Giordano with you on Reading, Writing, and Reason. I'm going to teach you. Hey, welcome back, everyone, to Reading, Writing, and Reason, in which we highlight all matters educational, the spending, parental rights. And when I think of parental rights, the mantra in this election that ought to be used all elections.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
I think of Moms for Liberty. Moms for Liberty co-founder Tiffany Justice joined me on my noon to three radio show this past week. And we talked about parental rights. We talked about the weaponization of the Biden administration against those that are just speaking out at school board meetings. Even one Moms for Liberty member who got a visit from the FBI. That's kind of chilling, is it not? Here's what Tiffany Justice told me about that. Tiffany, welcome back to Philadelphia.
Oh, thanks for having me on. You know, we love Philadelphia. We had a summit there last summer, and so just a very special place to us, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Wow, absolutely. And you got the best of Philadelphia and the worst. I just don't know, Tiffany, though, if Moms for Liberty had that drawing power. You only had DeSantis, the president, former president, and others in that. I mean, come on now. You guys got to work a little bit harder at that. That wasn't that impressive. But Tiffany, back on the issue now, what some things have happened around this weaponization of government. You did a presentation on this, I think, with Heritage. So what's the latest around school boards and your members? And one had the FBI visitor.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about Heritage first. They have a project, it's the Oversight Project, and what they're really trying to do is dig in on the weaponization of the American government against the American people. And so I was really honored to be a part of a all-day symposium where we heard from different legislators in Congress. We heard from tech experts, Homeland Security experts, really talking about how the American government is using the different levers that they have in order to undermine really our democracy, our country. And so schools are very important to the left, and that was what I was there to really talk about. I think it's been surprising to people to see the backlash, right? How much ire parents getting up at school board meetings have drawn from the unions and from the left just for getting up and saying things that, you know, are really easy things to see and know, right? Kids are being indoctrinated. There's a lot of division being sown in the schools. We're seeing that constantly. Parents getting up and talking about concerns about academic achievement. Only a third of kids reading on grade level in America, right? So parents are getting up and speaking. Their mics are getting shut down. The National School Board sent a letter to the Department of Justice, and within 5 days, Merrick Garland sicked the FBI on moms and dads. And so you're right. After speaking at a school board meeting, one of our moms was contacted by an FBI field office. And as I'm sure you can imagine, and anyone listening, how incredibly shocking that you're making peanut butter and jelly one day, and the FBI calls you and has questions about why you were mad at your school board the night before.
Yes, nothing more than that. I mean, you talk about chilling. That's why, thank God, Moms for Liberty there is a blanket that can help with this. Some of the things, too, I wanted to know, the banned, so-called banned books thing is out there. Tiffany, so much that NBC and the AP just ran a story saying that librarians across the board, both school and public libraries, are afraid they're going to be put in jail because of actions like Moms for Liberty and others on these books. And we've come up with a new test of a book that might be iffy. If you go to the local school board and you start to read it and say it's available in a junior high or middle school or something, and they tell you you have to shut up, you can't read that in a public meeting, that's a pretty good barometer. Maybe it shouldn't be in the library there. The thing that's going on now, too, is the absentee rate is incredibly high in a lot of schools.
We can talk about the absentee rate. I mean, is it shocking to anyone that we closed schools for 2 years in some places, the unions closed schools down, and is it shocking that the kids got the message that going to school wasn't that important? Why is anyone surprised about that, right? I mean, I feel like we undermined the respect that anyone should have for the education system by doing that.
Yes, and what's happened here, rather than this being the Manhattan Project post-COVID because of all that was lost, it's carrying over and making it lesser than before COVID hit. And in my estimation, here in Philadelphia, what I see, it's not good. I don't see catch-up happening at all in many places.
Yeah, it's scary. I mean, the truth of the matter is, and if you're a mom or a dad, you know that every year of your child's life matters. Certainly, you know, the difference between 5 and 6 and 6 and 7 and 7 and 8, those are important years where a lot of development has happened. And so the idea that we could just take a kindergartner and have them skip first grade or have them skip first and second grade and then try to make up, you know, those years and those amount of time, what a huge responsibility and burden to put on teachers. It's an almost impossible task. And so, you know, I think we need to be honest about that. Schools never should have been closed. And to your point about the library books, if you can't get up at a public meeting
right,
and read the book, then it has no place in a public school. If I walked up to your kid on a playground and I showed your child that book and I would be arrested for showing it to them, it doesn't belong in a public school. And I think we just need to be honest about this. This is common sense stuff. Hopefully in 2024, 2025, we're going to see a president who, you know, makes sure that common sense is not so rare like it is right now. But adults are just being silly about a lot of this. You know, teachers, librarians saying they're going to go to jail. Hey, don't show kids porn and you won't go to jail. I think it's very simple.
Does Moms for Liberty, a little bit unclear, we have a lot, of course, Tiffany, coming out about abortion. President Trump's statement the other day, I think, was right on. Then we saw Arizona. When you endorse, when you're involved in that, is that an issue that Moms for Liberty gets involved in?
No, we don't. I mean, we're focused on parental rights and education, and okay. First and foremost, a parental rights organization. I mean, my own personal opinion, Dom, I'll share with you. You know, I was raised Catholic. For me, I think America will be a much better place when we're fighting to protect children and children. So I just think in general, we have as a nation, especially during COVID, I think we saw that kids weren't really valued. All of this selfishness from adults and fear was placed on their shoulders to try to keep adults safe. Never in the history of our country have we ever, used children to try to keep adults safe. It's supposed to be adults keeping kids safe. And again, this is another common sense issue. And so, you know, protecting kids is first and foremost in my mind. And we need to have a kids first mentality when we create policy.
Parting question for you today. I'm not sure if we spoke post your 60 Minutes interview, but my take was that you guys had the first thing everybody ought to recognize. You have the guts to go on 60 Minutes knowing that it's taped, knowing that they just want to come at you. But knowing also if you can withstand that, it gives a lot of attention to the ultimate parental rights group in the country, which I think is Moms for Liberty. So what was it like making that decision to go on? I think it was with Scott Pelley.
It was with Scott Pelley, and that was a really easy decision for Tina Deskovich, who's the co-founder of Moms for Liberty, and I to make. We say yes to a lot of interviews. Now, I wouldn't go on Joy Reid taped. I said I would go on Joy Reid Live, and I did. But it's 60 Minutes. And we really want to try to reach every single person in America that we can reach with our message about the fact that the public education in system has become a jobs program that cares more about adults' wants than kids' needs. And so for Tina and for me, we were happy to do it. Was it a fair representation of the interview? Absolutely not. We were on for an hour and a half talking with Scott Pelley, and they actually used up time during the aired interview of me breathing. So I think they really didn't want to share our message. But the truth is, I think we held our own. We were proud of the job that we did. And a lot more people know about Moms for Liberty, and hopefully they check us out. And when they do check us out, they see that we're not silly or stupid or foolish. It wasn't that we were searching for words or answers. It was that 60 Minutes didn't like the answers we gave them to the questions.
I'm in complete agreement. When you're willing to go into the lion's den, I always admire that, even if it's a left group. They're willing to come on. I'm sure you do, too, and debate you guys or go into talk radio. You got to admire that. That's all that we ask. That's what it's supposed to be about. Where do people go to find Moms for Liberty and chapters and all that?
Yeah, go to momsforliberty.org. I want to be really clear. You are not alone. If you are sitting in your house right now, or you're in your car and you're listening to the radio and you're hearing me talk about the fact that kids aren't learning to read and that our country is in a dark place where we really need Americans, patriots, to step up, go to momsforliberty.org.
All right, that's our show for this week. Remember, reading, writing, and reason. You can find it, tell people, wherever they get their podcasts. Hear it here, too, on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Thanks to Dan for producing each and every week all those issues that involve, at the end, parental rights, issues of money, curriculum, and all. It all comes back to that. That is the core issue. It's a shame there's a divide on it. I will see you next week here on Reading, Writing, and Reason on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
You need a lesson, gonna bring it to you now.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.